we're kind of favoring those who are more outspoken, who do push themselves forward. Every time our processes reward that in some way, then actually what we're doing is we're demonstrating bias against introverts.
My name is Katharina, and I'm the Community and Event Manager at eCulture, a company that is on a mission to shape the world of unbiased hiring. Welcome to the Oops, I'm Biased podcast.
So today on the Oops, I'm Biased podcast, I am talking to Joanna Rawbone. Joanna is an expert on introversion and extroversion bias. She is a coach. She gives workshops. She does keynotes. She even did a TEDx talk about introverts. And we are very lucky to be talking to her today about the challenges that introverts face in the recruitment process and how the recruitment process is basically favoring extroverts. So we will cover the basics of introversion and extroversion, what particularly makes introverts good at certain things. We talk about the extroversion bias, what it is and how it manifests in the recruitment process, which parts of the recruitment process are most susceptible to extroversion bias. And Joanna also shares lots of actionable tips and advice for recruiters, for companies, but also for introverted candidates to shine in the recruitment process. Without further ado, I really hope you enjoy this episode. Hi, Joanna. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. It's a real pleasure to be here with you.
Likewise, it's a pleasure to have you. This conversation has been quite a few weeks in the making. We've had an initial conversation a few weeks ago and then happy to finally get recording with you. You do so much that I know of. We just spoke about you traveling all across Europe and even doing a conference for Australia, which is wonderful. And we're very lucky to have you to talk about extroversion bias and the challenges for introverts in the recruitment process. But I would love to start a bit more general. Could you explain what introversion actually is and how it relates to extroversion and all of those things?
Yeah, and it's a great place to start because there are so many myths and misconceptions still about what introversion is. So I'm a Jungian at heart rather than a Freudian in psychological terms. So I go back to the original Jungian definition, where he talked about introverts being inward looking. And so we build our resilience and we recharge from going inwards or being quiet. Or in my case, being with others who are quiet like me in what I love to call companionable silence. So where we can walk together or just be together without having to chatter necessarily all the time, because that gives me a chance to be in the positive energy of somebody else, but without having to talk, so I can recharge my batteries at the same time. He then talked about extravert, and he used extra rather than extro, extravert being outwardly focused. And so the difference is that extroverts get their energy from social interactions, from active experiences, and from change. So the very thing that tends to drain the battery of an introvert charges the battery of the extrovert. And I think that's where some of the tension lies and why quite often extroverts can't really understand introverts. And I've got to say, likewise, introverts don't always understand extroverts and can hold quite negative opinions about them. So I think it's really important that what we do is we understand the difference and we learn to value that difference and learn to build that into an inclusive culture rather than thinking it's them and us, good and bad. You know, we're just different. We're just different. So I like to say, as an introvert, I'm not weird, I'm wired differently.
That's a wonderful way of putting it. I think for introversion and extroversion, there's a lot of that dichotomy at play, right? We talk very much in contraries and sort of, oh, this is an antonym for the other. How do you see that? Is that the case for you?
Yeah, so people often talk about it being, you know, a continuum or a dichotomy, and there are people who are at each extreme of that. So we'll have the extroverted extroverts and the introverted introverts. But more often than not, we are somewhere on that continuum. So once we have those extremes, we then have, in our case, extroverted introverts, and likewise, there are introverted extroverts. So these are the people whose recharging needs remain the same. So I still need to be somewhere quiet or with quiet people to recharge my batteries. But I also have access to quite a lot of what we would refer to traditionally as extroverted behaviours without my batteries draining quite so much. And so for the extroverts who are the introverted extroverts, they still need to recharge in those busy, loud, noisy environments and lots of social interaction. But also they can do the kind of deep thinking that quite often introverts are renowned for. So we, you know, none of us are the same. We are all different on our spectrum of introversion and indeed extroversion. And it was Jung himself who at one point talked about ambivert. And I think a lot of people have jumped on the ambivert bandwagon saying, but I'm a bit of both. Well, yes, we are, because our behavior doesn't necessarily portray who we really are. When the chips are down, when I need to recharge my batteries, do I gravitate towards people or away from people? I can behave any other way I want to, provided the charge in my battery is right. So, you know, all of this is, I think, useful categorization, useful for understanding ourselves, but not to pigeonhole us, as it were.
Yeah, I think that's very reassuring for lots of people, because I think with many things in our lives, we need to sort of fall on one side or the other, which gives a bit of that safety and security. But it also, yeah, limits ourselves, it pigeonholes people into one camp or the other. So I really like your approach to this in saying, well, it's a spectrum. And there is extroverted introverts and the other way around. But again, when it comes down to how do we charge our batteries, I think everyone has an answer to that of, do we need the quiet time or do we need to socialize?
Simon Sinek has a beautiful way. If any of you have heard of his the way he describes it, he says extroverts wake up with no coins, and every, you know, significant social interaction they have, they get a coin. So as the day's going on, they're getting richer and richer and richer. Whereas introverts wake up with 5 coins, and every big social interaction costs them a coin. So they're getting kind of energetically poorer as the day goes on. And I think that's such a beautiful way to describe it.
Yeah, oh, that's such a wonderful depiction. Also, I see it in my mind how that goes. Makes it very tangible how it works.
Yeah.
Could you maybe go a bit into what introverts are particularly good at? Because I think there's a lot of focus on what extroverts are really good at, but maybe we can focus the conversation a bit on introverts.
Yeah. And it's so important that we do that, because education, society, business is geared up towards the extrovert ideal, to those things that extroverts are typically good at. And when it comes to introverts, we are typically much better at that, those kind of solo activities. So we're very good reflectors. We're very good researchers. We're very diligent when it comes to kind of getting to the bottom of things. So if we're problem solving, we'll typically stick with it until we've got the kind of the root cause issue, not just the presenting symptom, as it were. Typically, we're really good listeners. And so in meetings, we are highly unlikely to be the most vocal in a meeting. And that's because we're listening to what's not being said as well as what's being said. So we pick up on those gaps. We pick up on the incongruences sometimes, and we're able to assimilate ideas and summarize well for people. So we're very resourceful in our own right, and we're very steady. We're very calming influence quite often. When we see introverted leaders, they have this aura around them. They have this presence that everyone just kind of breathes out in their presence. It's not all kind of frenetic and het up and energetic. It's just calming. And so, you know, they're some of the things that introverts typically are really good at, and that we need more of in the world. We need more listening and less talking, actually, in the world.
Yeah, that what you just said at the end, I definitely resonate very much with. But I think there's so much value in having leaders, especially who can slow down, who can slow a team down, who can calm everyone down and sort of approach it from a slower pace, from a sort of more just a more introverted perspective where it's not everything about the running, the grinding, the doing everything really quickly and really loudly as well. I think that's where many things go wrong.
Yeah. And we quite often find that actually we get things done faster when we approach them more slowly. You know, that the old saying about, you know, less haste, more speed. And I think there's some real truth in that, that if we take our time at the beginning to think things through, to prepare, then we can actually move fast once we get into action and we're not having to backtrack all the time.
Yeah. Oh, that's a wonderful way of looking at it. What are some misconceptions around introverts, especially when it comes to the workplace?
So because we tend to be quieter and not pushing ourselves forward, not volunteering for everything necessarily, people can think we lack ambition. And that's one of the big things that once you're in an organization and, you know, looking at career paths and career planning, we need to make sure that we're not overlooking the quiet ones because they are often just as ambitious, but in a very much quieter, calmer way. So they will take their time and look for things that really suit their temperament. But we should never overlook them as being leaders. So my first one would be that we lack ambition because it's not true at all. The second thing I'd say is because we have a think, say, think communication process, which is the opposite to the extrovert that say, think, say. When we're asked a question, we will typically go inward and really think about what our answer is. And if we're in one of those fast-paced environments, people can make the assumption that we don't know the answer or we don't have an opinion on things, when actually what we're doing is we're taking our time to make sure that what we're going to say is really aligned with who we are and what our true opinion is. So it's important that we give introverts space in a conversation to think those things through, which goes back to the calm leadership we were talking about earlier. And then something that goes on top of that, that introverts themselves sometimes conflate with introversion, is social anxiety. So introverts are selectively social. If I have enough charge in my mental and emotional and social battery, I will party, I will interact, I will do whatever as well as the next one. But once that battery's drained, I'm out of there. I'm kind of disappearing. There are people who have social anxiety, but extroverts have social anxiety as well. And can you imagine how challenging that is, needing the social interaction to charge the battery and at the same time fearing it? So introverts are not socially anxious. We don't fear social interaction. We just don't need it quite as much as the extroverts do. Certainly we don't need it for our batteries.
I think there's such prevalent misconceptions around, well, you must just not like any people if you don't, or that you're scared of them because you don't want to hang out with people. It's a very toxic way of looking at, well, I suppose almost 50% of the population.
Yeah. So we do need to up the understanding and accept that if people have social anxiety or are misanthropes, you know, social anxiety, there are great therapies that can help them with that. If they are genuinely shy, there are things they can do with that. But if we identify as introverts, that doesn't need fixing. It's literally the way we're wired. Yeah. So, you know, there's no therapy needed when you're an introvert, just because you're an introvert.
Definitely something that I think our listeners can take away a lot from. Sort of, there's nothing wrong with me. I just have a different way of recharging my batteries, which is wonderful to hear. I think people get that discourse a lot, that they feel like there's something wrong with them or they need to be more extroverted. I think the recruitment process is quite a topical, sort of quite a relevant place where people are being told that they need to be more extroverted and that questions are being asked in that way. Leads me into my question around, well, extroversion bias. I think you mentioned it briefly already. What exactly do we mean by extroversion bias and how does it manifest in recruitment?
Yeah, so the bias towards the extrovert ideal shows up in everyday practices and processes in education, in the workplace, in society, actually. So every time we're kind of favoring those who are more outspoken, who do push themselves forward, every time our processes reward that in some way, then actually what we're doing is we're demonstrating bias against introverts. So we see it in education, we see it on through into the workplace. And if we think about it in recruitment, I have to say my heart sunk the first time I realized there were interview coaches who were coaching people how to behave as a more of a, as an extrovert in the interview. Because again, what we're doing is we're playing into that bias. And I've seen the consequences of that, where the individual then turns up at work and within 2 or 3 weeks, the manager is saying, who's this? That's not who we recruited. Because we want to recruit people to be consistent in the way they perform an interview through on into the way they are in the workplace. And we need that balance of quiet skills. We don't need people who are just pushing themselves and talking all the time. You know, one of the constant complaints in organizations is that, you know, we're not good at addressing root causes. We rush into things. You know, lots of people are talking, nobody's listening. Well, that's because you're encouraging that and rewarding that in the workplace. So I think from a recruiter's perspective, what we need to do is be as unbiased as possible. And I know that's quite hard, but be as unbiased as possible when we're in those initial conversations with people. And if people are taking a little while to answer questions, we should pick up the signal for that in that actually this person is a thinker. They're kind of reflecting and they're considering their answer rather than just rushing off the thing that's on the top of their head, as it were. And then on through into interviews, it's about, I would suggest, having a panel of people, some of whom, yes, represent the extrovert dimension, some of whom represent the introvert, because both in the questioning, the pace, and also the reflection afterwards, you will have a much more balanced process.
Yeah, that's already you're going into the next question, which I think, well, probably could be a whole podcast on its own. I think the question around, so which parts of the recruitment process then are super susceptible to extroversion bias, when now we talk about, well, on the one hand, if extroversion bias really gives an inaccurate image of introverts then being hired and then sort of letting the hiring manager down in sort of layman's terms, yeah, of saying, well, this is not who we hired. And on the other hand, not valuing the strengths that introverts bring, where in the recruitment process does it go wrong first, do you think, in sort of getting that chain of events going?
I think it can be as early as those initial conversations. And of course, processes are so different now. You know, so much of it is done online, and that's not necessarily going to pick out all those things, except when we look at people's experience. So if even in that, when we're looking at CVs, we're valuing people who've been captains of teams, who've, you know, been in the debating society, who've done those kind of things, as opposed to those who've researched or done those, you know, quieter activities. If we notice that we're starting to think, oh, that's leadership material, well, I'm not sure it is, because again, quiet leadership that comes from within, rather than storming out front saying, follow me, chaps, is again what's needed, because we can ensure that actually there's more psychological safety around when what we're doing is we're allowing people to be themselves, in fact, encouraging them to be genuinely, authentically themselves, rather than pretending to be something they're not. So it can be on the CV sift, it can be on those initial conversations, and it can certainly be on the interview panels. And if there are assessment exercises, for instance, if there's a discussion that you know, we're putting people through, I've seen people be marked down because they only said two things and nobody was looking at, yes, but what did they say? So again, we tend to favour those who speak up more. And what we need to be looking at is, okay, what's the quality of the contribution? I had a lovely example of a chap who was on my podcast quite a while ago now. And during one of those group discussions as part of an assessment centre, he noticed that somebody hadn't said anything at all. So he invited them into the conversation. Now, that's the kind of qualities we want from organisations who are serious about creating an inclusive culture, is people who notice who's in and who's not in, who maybe is being somehow excluded from conversations. So, you know, there is a lot of work still here to do.
Yeah, oh, that's a great example. I think, yeah, especially when we talk about assessment centres, or when we talk about those crucial steps in any recruitment process where people need to step up, well, are expected to step up and sort of show off what they can do and all of their strengths. That's exactly where it goes wrong, because then it really feeds into that bias of people who are sort of the front runners, the ones who are always the first ones not looking back, who might want to be invited. Yeah. Or needs that helping hand in a way, people who are more observant. I think that's a great example of where extroversion bias is very counterproductive for what you might be looking for.
And, you know, I think there are other examples as well about, you know, do we give people a heads up as to, if we want them to do a presentation, do they know in advance what that presentation is? Because do we want people who can just kind of blag it, who can wing it, who can just from the top of their head, and it might not be meaningful? Or do we actually want people who will say, if that's the topic I've got to give a 5-minute presentation on, I'm going to go away and do some research so that I know the key data that I want to present in my 5 minutes and structure it? So I think we should be giving people heads up to what the topics are. Those with an introversion bias are probably going to take that more seriously. Those with an extroversion kind of leaning are going to say, oh, I'll be all right, I'll wing it on the day. And both of those is fine, but let's create a level playing field so that the introverts can deliver the presentation that they wanted to, not that they've spent the whole time thinking, what am I going to say, but that actually they've got that and now they can plan and deliver the way they wanted to.
Would you say that that also goes for interview questions, when we talk about interviews being one of those crucial parts where it can disadvantage introverts very heavily?
I think so. I mean, I don't think we need the whole list of questions, but I think what we do need is what's the journey that the questions are going to take? Because, again, if I go back to how introverts have been coached in interview situations, the classic thing that's going to come up is, you know, what role do you fulfill in a team? What kind of team player are you? And apparently they were being coached to kind of, you know, give really strong, positive answers about how they're always there and, you know, they'll be right in the mix of everything that's going on, etc. I would much rather introverts were honest and say something like, well, I am a team player, but maybe not in the traditional sense. So I'm going to be one of the quieter ones who's noticing what's going on in the team, who can fill in the gaps, who can pull people back together. But I'm never going to be the one who speaks the most. And I think, finding a way to articulate our strengths positively is crucial for a successful interview, because I don't know any employer who would say, no, we don't want those kind of team players. We want the people who are just going to barge ahead regardless. I don't know anybody that would recruit that over somebody who says, actually, I'm going to pay attention and make sure that we are performing together as a team.
Yeah, no, I can totally see that. And especially when companies now look into, well, sourcing for more diversity, hiring a more diverse team, I think everyone would like a well-rounded team where all of those strengths are also portrayed by different people. We don't want all of the same people, because that is where things go wrong indeed. Yeah. Do you think that there are specific questions that companies maybe should shy away from, or is it more about the expectation of the answer that is where companies go wrong?
Do you know, that's a really, really good question. And it is going to depend on the sector, the industry, etc. But I think we should always go with those questions that say, you know, tell me a time when things didn't go well and how did you recover the situation? What strengths and resources did you use to recover the situation? I think we should always include those types of questions. But, you know, maybe to steer clear of the questions that are about, you know, how have you shown leadership? Now, I'm not saying that's a bad question, but quite often, unless an introvert is well aware and has owned their strengths and their qualities as an introvert, potentially they might think they haven't shown leadership. So they're going to struggle with that type of question. So, but again, if we give people the roadmap of where the questioning is going, so we're going to ask you something about, you know, your strengths and the things you love doing. We're going to ask you about when things went wrong and what skills, resources you demonstrated in order to get you past that. We're then going to ask you a little bit about your aspirations, you know, so I think just give people a bit of a roadmap about where we're going with the questions.
Yeah, I think everyone can benefit from that. If you're an extrovert or an introvert, I think everyone likes to come in prepared. Well, it's just, an advantage for everyone. It doesn't really do anything other than level the playing field, as you said earlier.
Well, and then the results when we come to the reflective piece around kind of thinking about the different candidates and what they demonstrated, we're going to get a better picture of everybody to be able to make the decision rather than the biased decision being, well, they said more, they spoke up more, they looked more confident rather than they sat back and thought about something. So we need a balance of extroverts and introverts on the decision, on the interview panel, but also in the decision group as well.
Yeah, that is a great piece of advice, I think, for everyone who assembles an interview panel or a hiring team, as it were. I have two more sort of moments in the recruitment process that I'd love to talk about. And one is specifically assessments. Are there assessments that companies put on that are, well, riddled with extroversion bias? Is there anything that you would recommend even for companies who want to be more inclusive towards introverts?
I think any of those that are purely team-based, where, you know, we're looking to who shows leadership and we're judging that in that traditional sense of this person took control and they kind of, you know, dominated the conversation, that's something to watch out for. And I was very impressed when I did my TEDx talk that a recruiter was talking to me about, in light of all of that, what she now does is she builds in, after the typical team activity, because there's always a team activity or a team conversation, we do want to see how people act spontaneously in the moment, but not to judge them as good or bad, but just to notice the different qualities. But she now builds in a reflective piece after that, where the introverts typically shine. So they're asked to reflect on questions like, you know, what roles did people play? You know, where did you notice that things could have been done differently? And often the introverts will shine through that process, whereas the extroverts were often not noticing all of that because they were so busy kind of in the lead role in the moment. So I think just to include that balance is really important.
Yeah. Oh, that's a wonderful piece of advice. I think many of our listeners will now take notes and write down, reflection. Because you mentioned that earlier as well as being one of the strengths of introverts to be more reflective, to sit back and observe. I think that's a wonderful way of letting them shine in the recruitment process because, that is what you need in a team.
And it's also, I'm a big fan of Professor Amy Edmondson, who was the first person to talk about psychological safety. But she also talks about situational humility is such a strong quality for people to have. And we should be looking for that, I think, in more of the people that we're looking to recruit.
I think that fits quite well with the last question they have before I go into a bit more advice that you might have for recruiters. When it comes to salary negotiations or negotiations of any kind towards, well, getting close to being hired. Do you have any advice or what do you see go wrong from an organization's perspective that might, where the extroversion bias comes through a lot?
typically, I think it's extroverts are much more likely to hold their skills highly, and they're probably much more likely to demand a higher salary. And again, we can either put that down to confidence, but if we backtrack through it quite a lot, we can also see that because introverts have spent years or sometimes decades being told to be different, push yourself forward more, speak up more, do this more, do that more, a lot of us end up with that sense of we're not enough as we are. So when it comes to salary negotiation, typically we're more likely to be at the lower level, thinking that actually this organization is not going to value what I bring. And I think we've all met those people who are overconfident, who oversell themselves. And again, we get to see them, you know, at the coalface, as it were, and they don't deliver in the way that they said they would deliver. So I think there can be disappointment on both sides as well. So I think this is something to really be thoughtful about, to be mindful about. And that's where it possibly comes back to. So let's be really clear about the skills and qualities that are required for this role. And let's articulate those in ways that aren't biased as well.
Yeah, that's a great way of coming full circle with what us talking about different moments in the recruitment process. Because I do think with many of the issues that we see with recruitment, it does start with defining the requirements. Is it going to be a laundry list of wishes that someone just wrote down and thought, oh, this is all of what we need, sort of the ideal candidate who doesn't exist? Or is it actually a sort of a shorter list, well thought out, of actually seeing, okay, what do we actually lack in our team?
Yes.
What is actually the core of what we need? And what are all of those wish list items, as it were, that are actually disadvantaging certain groups?
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of moments where recruiters can be a lot more mindful around what they're actually expecting. Do you think that there is any sort of workshop training, anything that recruiters could do to or anyone who's involved in the hiring process, could be a hiring manager as well, to learn more about more extroversion bias, maybe the underlying thought patterns that they have? Do you have any suggestions for how they could continue their education on that?
I think there's definitely an awareness piece that needs to happen. It's working around the unconscious bias area, but also recognizing that those areas that we've typically been working on have excluded this piece around the quieter folk. So it is about raising awareness that this is another aspect, another element of the DEI agenda. So we do need to raise awareness of understanding extroversion, introversion, typically how we're going to see people manifest their behaviors through those different lenses, so that we ourselves can value that in ourselves and in the people that we're interviewing too.
Yeah, it's probably a very overlooked piece of the D&I puzzle, but I think and equally as important, because every person, regardless of how different demographical data or their experience or their past intersects, falls on that spectrum, right? We all sort of fall on the spectrum. So it's actually quite a big piece, I would say.
Absolutely.
That should be overlooked.
Yeah. And we recruiters know that they need to be avoiding that kind of, you know, creating an echo chamber where they're just recruiting in their own, or the manager is recruiting in their own like. So we need to make sure that we're aware of all, you know, the affinity bias and all of those sorts of things. So this is just another aspect of that, really.
Yeah. Joanna, thank you so much for coming on the podcast and talking to me about extroversion bias and introverts and what their challenges are, and most importantly, what their opportunities are. And how we can make sure that we don't select them out, but we select them in. So I want to thank you. And I hope that everyone really enjoyed our conversation. I surely did.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
For everyone who listened today, please connect to Joanna Robon on LinkedIn. She's super active there. If you fall anywhere, and I know all of us do, on the spectrum of extroversion and introversion, I know you'll find her content super useful. She is also, gives trainings and workshops and coaches people So I think that will be a wonderful resource for everyone out there. And yeah, thank you so much for listening, and I hope to see you on the next one. Bye.